you want, you can use my computer. I have another computer. And you can use it now.
Right. Never any talk about climate change or sea level rise. We've never heard of it. Never heard of it. I don't think Miami people have heard of it about it either. So I graduated from Pettus High School, went to the University of Florida, and I graduated from the University of Florida, and I immediately, like 3 weeks later, got on an airplane and moved to New York City, where I lived for about 18 years, and then I went to Philly, where I lived a few more years, and then I came back to Miami. When I came back to Miami that first fall, my car in my parking lot would get flooded. Like the parking lot would get mysteriously get flooded after a rain. You know, a lot of people came around. It would happen over and over and over again. And I'm like, what is happening here? I don't understand what is happening here. And so luckily, I met your professor, Dr. Pinto, and Professor McMillan, and they had worked together on a documentary called South Florida's Rising Seas. Perhaps you have heard of it. You haven't told them about it.
I haven't. You haven't yet heard of it.
Oh, okay. So you should check it out. It's on YouTube. It's an award-winning documentary. And it basically it's a very sort of, it explains what's happening with Florida and flooding and sea level rise. So it's suddenly like, oh, maybe this is related to some of our climate change issues. Maybe this is related to sea level rise. So Dr. Pinto and I and some of our colleagues, we applied for a grant to infuse climate change into the journalism curriculum. This is like in 2014. We won that grant, and with that, started working on projects to help inform, educate, raise the awareness of citizens living in Florida, living in Miami with respect to climate change, and also educating our students about the potential impacts of climate change. It's going to be very significant. Climate change in South Florida is going to be perhaps the most important story of your journalism career. The various impacts, the flooding, the health impacts, the transportation impacts, the real estate impacts, is coming. So what I'm going to share with you today are some of the projects that I've been working on in this area. In the fall, who here has seen the flooding in the fall? Okay. Yes, I recognize some of you from Intro to TV, where if you have my Intro to TV class in the fall, you will get a chance to see the flooding firsthand. Because we'll send you out to document it. Okay, so this video, actually, you'll see here, is from the King Tide flooding in a place in the neighborhood called Shorecrest, which is on Northeast 10th Avenue. Northeast 78th to 80th Street in that area. Those are streets. And what happens is in the fall, and it has something to do with the lineup of the moon and the sun, but in the fall the tides are higher. Like in South Florida, they're higher. They're the highest that they are of the year. We call these tides the king tides. And what happens is the tides can be like a foot and a half above their normal tide levels during the peak tides. And as sea level rise has increased, and of course, what causes sea level rise? Who knows? Global warming is a contributor. The melting of the ice caps. Okay, so as the That's one thing in the melting of the ice caps. So as this happens, our high tides become higher. And in South Florida, we're at an average elevation of about 3 feet. And the high tides at their highest are about 3 or 4 feet. So imagine that plus another foot of water. So this is it's not an exact calculation. There are other factors that contribute to this. But this is why we see flooding in the streets of South Florida during the King Tides. And this is not from rain. This is from a rain-free day. This water bubbles up from the water system, from those drains that you see on the streets. It literally bubbles up from that. So this is a drone video taken by one of our students. So what we wanted to do, well, let me tell you some things that we did that I've done. Let me go a little bit more in detail. So what we wanted to do to try to help educate people about what might happen in the King Tides, or in the case of sea level rise and its impact on Miami, we built this little application with the GIS Center here at FIU, and it's pretty simple. You enter your address. So let's enter.
Give us an address.
Give us an address. 3732. Southwest 49th Street, Fort Lauderdale? Okay, so what this shows, I'm going to zoom out on this map a little bit, is that your elevation is about 5.7 feet. Okay, so let's see what happens. And this sometimes takes a minute to paint. There you go. So as I'm doing a slidey slide here, we're seeing a simulation of how much water there might be at different levels of sea level rise. So at 6 feet of sea level rise, oh, I'm sorry. Okay, let's go back. Let's see what, okay. Yeah, it could get a little wet. Does it get wet in your area during the fall? Do you see any flooding?
Yeah.
Yes? Okay, yeah, that doesn't surprise me. That is quite possible. And Broward County, as with parts of Miami-Dade County, they're doing something about this. I mean, they're taking some steps to help raise the roads, to inform their citizens. You know, they're aware that this is an issue. Okay, so you too can find this. I think it's at the URL for this is eyesontherise.org/app if you want to go to it and enter in your address. And it is somewhat mobile friendly now. Oh, good. Yes. So, yes. eyesontherise.org/app. Yeah, I made a somewhat responsive version. Somewhat. Yes. You'll see the interface is larger than it should be. We're working on that. Okay. All right. So the reaction that you just had about like seeing your neighborhood underwater at 6 feet of sea level rise, we've seen this reaction over and over again with the good citizens of Miami, right? As a matter of fact, I have to say, we made a bit of a splash with this application. A lot of press coverage. The most prolific, well, to me, maybe the most prolific. Anyhow, Scientific American called me, talked to me for an hour about this application, and they quoted me saying one thing. They quoted me saying, "Yeah, when we show this to people in Miami, it's a real holy shit kind of moment." So I'm forever in Scientific America having uttered that phrase.
But it's been in political and
CNN, yes, where I do not use political. Right. Yes. So sorry if I offended anybody. But yeah, which is one of those things. Just right out of my mouth and right onto the page. Okay.
That's what we call a vibrant quote.
Yeah, actually, I'll send you this. This is a draft of an article that's going to go up in a magazine. I can send you the link if you want to share them, because some of the links are in here and some of the information. Okay, so we had some success with this the next thing that we wanted to do is I worked with Juliet and with the Sea Level Rise Solution Center here at FIU to develop a system for having citizens go out during the peak tides to document flooding. And this method that we developed has evolved a bit over the years. And so now we're using like an online form you can access on your phone. We send you out to the place and the time where flooding is likely to occur. So on the day of the highest high tides, locations that we know will be flooding, and ask people to measure the water depth, measure the salinity. And we've been collecting data like this and visualizing it on maps. I can show you. So this is Shorecrest. We have a map here. This is last year. Okay, here we go. So here's a Google map that shows. Okay. So this shows, this is that area that we're looking at in the video. This is Shorecrest. These are data points where people went around and collected samples of the water, of the salinity, of the water depth, and this is all pretty good. Okay. So, yes, we have a few of these maps popping around. So, the most prolific day was October 7th, that's where that video is from. And here, the way that this is you can see where the dots are darker, the water is deeper. So if we go here, we should get to see. Okay, so this is on the corner. There's a big fire station right here. Actually, yeah, well, we should have another. Let me try another map. Well, I'll show you. So this was taken at the height of the high tide. Taken on the same day at different times. So this is, so the high tide in Shorecrest is going to be between 10 and 11. So this should be at the time of the highest water depth. This is in September, this is in October. And this is the time at 8:30 to 10, so this is before, this is when the water is creeping up, and this is 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. when the water is going down. And that's exactly what we saw. The high tides were scheduled sometime in the 10 a.m. hour, that was when they were at their highest. Encroaching around 9 and going away around noon. And again, not rain. This is not about rain. It's water that is literally bubbling up through the water system. And so here, okay, so we'll look up here. There's a bunch of stuff in here. So the darker the dot, the deeper the water, and the times represent. The colors represent different time periods. So this is before. Okay, so here we are. We're across the street. You can see that over here is the fire station. And then here, you can see that the water is a little bit deeper. Sorry about that. Okay, so this was at the height. So you can see that the right and the left sides of the anyhow, you could see the water not quite reaching the side of the road at the 9 a.m. hour, reaching it at the 10 a.m. hour, and then dissipating like literally an hour later. So this is an hour difference between here. Neighborhoods, of where they impact neighborhoods, what the differences are, what are some of the physical differences. These are things that are not completely understood. Like the scientists, they understand everything on a big level, but when it gets down to what's going on your street, this is where we're trying to fill some of the gaps. Okay. Another tool that we made, I worked with was this tool, let me show you. This is called Will It Flood. And so we made this tool because if the way we figure out when the king tides are going to be around, if you go to a site produced by NOAA, the National Ocean Atmospheric Agency. Yes, okay. Anyhow, NOAA has tide tables in the entire U.S. And the way it works is that they have a few live tide monitoring stations. The real-time data is coming in. So Virginia Key is one of those. But they have a whole bunch of places where they have done measurements in the past, and now they have predictions. So the state of Florida has about 500 tide monitoring stations that are either used to predict tides or so what we wanted to do was we wanted to look at those 500 stations, and we wanted to give people an idea, a heads up, about when they could expect the highest high tides. So we developed this application. The way it works is this. You enter your address. What?
650 West Avenue.
650.
West.
West
Avenue.
Oh, West Avenue. Yes, very nice. Oh, okay. So now this does not show flooding. What it will show you is it will figure out where the closest tide monitoring station is. Yours is, happens to be called Miami Beach. All right. And then it gives you a calendar that shows you when the tides are going to be at their highest. And on Miami Beach, there's a lot of them. And basically, what we've done is we've color-coded any tide over 2.5 feet. So what are we? We're Valentine's. Okay, so today, not 2.5 feet. You roll over it. You can see that there was a high tide this morning at 7:24 a.m. at 2.37 feet. There'll be another one at 7:20 p.m., which is 2.2. Not high enough to be an indicator here. But where it's light blue or dark blue, then you have both high tides, because you have four tides every day, two high tides and two low tides. So both high tides will be over 2.5 feet. If it's this color, only one of them are. If it's purple, that's the highest high tide of the month. Now, February is not such a worrisome month. This is where you want to watch out. So in September, it looks like the 10th and the 11th in your neighborhood. So NOAA says 3.5 feet, 3.47 feet there. This is 3.69 feet. That's the end. November, 3.35 feet. So it looks like October is going to be the deepest. Right? So now all of October is colored in because it's over 2.5 feet. We said that as kind of most neighborhoods, except Miami Beach, it works out pretty well.
And
so
do those months also coincide with
hurricane season? Yes, exactly. Okay, so if you want a heads up, if you live in an area that floods, and you want a heads up on somewhere and you don't get flooded. You may live in, for example, there are parts of Liberty City that are at a pretty high elevation and they're pretty far removed from the coast, so they don't really see the flooding that, say, Miami Beach sees. But of course, Miami Beach also has something to help mitigate against the floods. What is it?
A new drainage system.
The drainage system, the pumps. So the mayor, the former mayor of Miami Beach, is guy named Philip Levine. He, as mayor, and he was the first, I think just about the first mayor in the United States to do this. He's like, we have a problem here on Miami Beach with flooding. Because believe me, before those pumps were installed, Miami Beach had a very serious issue with flooding. And he said, we're going to do something about it. We're going to raise the roads. We're going to literally pump the water off of the streets. And we're going to buy Miami Beach 20 to 40 years with this method. And they did that. They're still in the process of putting the infrastructure in. It's a long-term project. But Miami Beach was one of the first municipalities in the U.S. to say, yeah, okay, those of you who say climate change doesn't exist, well, for some reason we're flooding, we're going to be doing something about it. This is what we're doing. It's an imperfect solution. You know, it is an imperfect solution. Basically what they're doing is they are pumping the water, actually they're pumping it out of the drainage system back into the bay. It's like the leaky rowboat, right? You know, the rowboat is filling up with water, and you're bailing the water, and at the same time the water is still coming in. Okay, but right now, the level of the water is such, and the power of the pumps is such, that for the king tide flooding, it does a pretty good job. We had one of the years when we went out in 2016, we sent a bunch of people out to Miami Beach in October for the king tides. There were a lot of dry streets. Actually, the streets were dry, but the pavement was wet, which is really a pretty strong indicator that something, you know, some kind of pumping action is going on. So that's what this application is about, is just to give people a heads up about if you do live in an area where it tends to flood, you can check this and find out when the high tides are going to be, so you can move your car, for example. That would have been very helpful for me in the fall of 2013 when my car gets flooded. We're working on some other projects. That's Code for Miami. Code for Miami, you need at the Cambridge Innovation Center in Wynwood. Have you guys ever been there? The CIC? Okay, have you ever been to Wynwood?
Yeah,
cool, right? Cool place. So the CIC is kind of like the Google of, I call it the Google of Miami, because it's a super cool, futuristic kind of co-working space. Do you know what that is, a co-working space? Mm-hmm. Okay, you should. If you're going to be like independent contractors doing media jobs, this could be a good place for you. But for those of you who are less familiar, what it is companies, small companies, startup companies, individuals, you can rent a desk. Like you have a big office space, you can come in with your laptop, do your work. They have Wi-Fi, they have printers, they have a cafe. There's really smart people there working. You can network with them. They have lots of events. It's a really good, stimulating work environment. The conference rooms are just amazing. You have to pay, to them every month, but it's much cheaper than say opening your own business. The physical location. So that's a co-working concept. So we meet there on Monday evening every week from 7 to 9 p.m. And we work on technology projects. We develop the Good Flood app there. And we're looking at things like improving the form that the people we send out to document flooding that they use. We're looking at some visualization alternatives to Google Maps, which limitations. We're working with a group, thinking about working with a group that does some augmented reality work. Do you guys know what augmented reality is?
Yeah.
Remember Pokemon Go? Okay, so it's not virtual reality where you're encased, right? So augmented reality is, like with the Pokemon Go example, you have your phone, the application turns on your phone's camera, so you're looking at the real world, and then you see Pikachu, and then you have to try to get him, right? That's augmented reality. So this group is called, I always forget the name of it. While there's still time? No.
Before it's too late.
Before it's too late. God, I cannot remember that. Before it's too late. It's great, great, great work. And they're doing this really cool thing where they're looking at the murals. They're taking murals and actually maybe commissioning some murals. You know, the murals that are in Blackwood Wood. And create an application that recognizes them. And then if you look at it through your phone, you will see additional like animations and videos about the level rise. So it's very cool. So we're looking for ways to use technology to help inform, engage, educate, prepare citizens for working with climate change, dealing with the impact of climate change in South Florida. Flooding is perhaps the number one issue that certain neighborhoods face, because every fall there's some flooding. But there are other issues. There are issues related to excessive heat. There are health issues. There are real estate challenges, shall we say. There's problems with what do you do with neighborhoods like Shorecrest that are heavily flooded. And then neighborhoods like Liberty City that are in a better position elevation-wise to be protecting themselves from the flood. And what happens if the folks in Shorecrest all decide to move over to Liberty City? And what happens to the people in Liberty City? There's lots of really big social questions that are connected to climate change in South Florida. Oh, so I have another thing, and I'll send the e-bite to Dr. Pinto, and she can send it to you. We're having a hackathon on March 3rd. March 3rd is Open Data Day. Have you ever heard of this? You know what open data is? Open data is the idea that data collected by governments, mostly governments, but sometimes nonprofit organizations, some public and private institutions, that some of it is made public. So that, for example, when we use the NOAA tide tables to create the Willett Flood app, that's an example of open data. And what happens is when you get a bunch of hackers together, like people who have some tech skills or some multimedia skills or some journalism skills, what can they do with these open data sets? How can they take the information that's buried in that mountain of data and make it meaningful, informative, you know, find the secrets that are hidden within there? That's kind of what the hackathon is about. So there will be the city of Miami. The city of Miami has a new open data portal that we will be using. One thing that I'm looking forward to working with is they have those building permits. And what this is a giant database. Okay. But it's all the building permits since and their status since 2014. So for example, if you wanted to see where the building permits are in the last 4 years, and you wanted to sort of map that against elevation, you could do something like that. This is the kind of thing where you could pull the data out of here and blend those two together. Now you're thinking, I know nothing about like hacking, I don't have any of those tech skills. That's okay. So we've set up some workshops in the morning on how to use Google Maps and how to use ArcGIS online, so you can get some basic mapping skills. So you can take data. This data, it has latitude and longitude. If it has latitude and longitude, you can literally download it into an Excel sheet, take that Excel sheet and plop it on a Google map and see what happens. All right, so we will give you some training in the morning. And there will be some other like professional hackers who have been doing this for a million years, doing their own thing. But we will give you that training. And then if you want to go join the other hackers in the afternoon, you come bearing some skills that you can put to use. So let me suggest, if you have any interest in this, please come. It's free. It's here in our new newsroom facility. very nice facility. They modeled it on a co-working space. So it's worth checking out just for that reason.
This is the event, those of you who are at the town hall, he announced the closing.
So you know there might be a rose in the side here. There will be food. We will have breakfast. We will have lunch. We're working on something for the afternoon. We'll see. So it will be a good, it will be a good event. You'll learn something. We're having Valencia Gunder come speak for lunch. Have you guys heard of her? You know who she is? She's a community activist from Liberty City, and her issue is social justice and climate change. Anyhow, she works with communities. She did a lot of hands-on helping of communities after Hurricane Irma, and she'll tell you about that. Like literally taking food because you had no power and you had to do it in a couple weeks. Like literally doing that. This woman herself, organizing people, very inspirational. So anyhow, so we're gonna have a bunch of stuff that Nancy gets to do. So please come if you can. It's Saturday. March 3rd, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., but really 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. is breakfast. Workshops start at 10. The mapping workshop was Google Maps, and then ArcGIS, which is ArcGIS is a proprietary mapping system, but it's like a Photoshop of mapping systems. You guys can do it in Photoshop. Okay. So you know Photoshop is like, you know, if you do image editing, use Photoshop. If you use the inexpensive ones or the free ones out there, eventually you're going to use Photoshop because it's like the tool that everybody uses. ArcGIS is the Photoshop of the mapping world. You want to make maps and you're not using Google Maps, you use ArcGIS. So, all right.